bit of my journey, how I became involved with the Labyrinth. So we know life is messy. It is full of twists and turns. When I turned 40, all of a sudden I lost my job that I had been in and loved for more than a decade. Decided to take the opportunity to go back to school and get my master's. The days are full. I haven't been to school, like there was a 15, 20 year gap. By the end of the day, my back would be stiff, my neck rigid, and my head so full, if someone came along and went like that, I'm certain my head would have toppled and fallen off. So one evening, I received an email to join a class to walk the labyrinth. I don't know what a labyrinth is. I've never even heard of the word. I couldn't even say it. So I went. A woman took white chalk and just drew a pattern on an empty black asphalt parking lot. And I filed in with the rest of the 60 people and walked it. And as I walked, I noticed sensations in my legs. And I noticed I was starting to breathe. I noticed my breathing sounds. And I was noticing my head was getting lighter and I was becoming whole. I noticed the sky, the color of the sky, it was pink. I felt breeze on my face. It was a good feeling that was not with me. I had lost. So I decided it was a good thing and I'm going to go out and tell people about this experience. A couple of years later, kind of the mother of this reinvention of labyrinth walks, she came to Vancouver, Reverend Dr. Lauren Artress. I got an email again. She's very expensive. It was a weekend conference. And at the time, I decided, I was working for the university at the time, and I said, if I could write a grant and send it off, if I get the money, I will go. And fortunately, I received the money in the forms of a grant, so off I went. I came back to South Fraser and told everybody, hey, we got to have a labyrinth. This is the best thing in the world. We just have to have one. And we decided we would each buy a break. It would cost like 70 cents, and we will hand dig a path, make a labyrinth in the back of our church. And that's when the entire project began. The city got involved and said, this is city land. We can't have a labyrinth here. The veterans, there's a statue for the veterans. They might not like it. So go to this park. Maybe we can do one there. I went there. I surveyed it and told them, this is the best spot. This is where I like it. Then they told me to go to another park. I think by about the fourth park, I go, I think they're trying to tell you they don't want a labyrinth, Diana. But I say, but I will go through the motions, which I did. I was finally sent to Fleetwood Park, and I discovered the manager there. He loves labyrinths, and he searches for labyrinths all over North America to walk. That was it. That made history. 2 years later, a labyrinth was born. So there are two types of labyrinths that are most common, the classical Seventh Circuit and the Chartres Cathedral Labyrinth. When you Google labyrinth, there's all kinds of styles and patterns. In general, we refer to these two types of labyrinths. So this is called the classical Seventh Circuit Labyrinth. This is how it looks, the pattern. And this is called the Chartres Cathedral Labyrinth. And this is the one that you might be most curious about because it has a Christian background. Okay. So labyrinths have been found in many cultures all over the world, dating back to about 4,000 years old. And its origin is unknown. So we found pieces of labyrinths in Southwest America, Peru, Egypt, Scandinavia, ancient Crete, Iceland, Sumatra, India, Wales, and on and on. We found pieces all over the world, so we know labyrinths exist for a long time. Okay, so and there's a whole bunch of history. And history changes over time because it's 4,000 to 5,000 years old. The most significant, I think, to the Christian community or to the faith or spiritual community is the Chartres Labyrinth that is found in Chartres, France. It was built around 1200 BC, and it is believed it was during a time when it was unsafe for Christians to make their yearly pilgrimage to Jerusalem. They built this labyrinth in the nave of the church as a substitute pilgrimage. Okay. So I'm just showing you a few slides of old labyrinths that are found. So this one is found in Goa, BC, and I mean Goa, India, and this one is found in Greece. And in England, there's one. So again, this is how the Chartres Labyrinth in France, that's how it looks like. And I'm showing you a few more slides to how labyrinths are being incorporated in different environments and different for different uses. So in a playground in New York, someone sent me this slide from Hong Kong, China. I got really excited because I am Chinese. A woman, she's a psychiatrist, she sent me this photo of, this is the labyrinth in her backyard that she's hoping to do therapy with people with mental illness. And this is a photo of a labyrinth in Iceland. My daughter was touring Iceland and saw this labyrinth, took a photo and said, "Mom, you have to see this." And downtown Toronto, there's a labyrinth. Some of these images I got off the internet, so they're of different quality. And this one is Kwantlen Technical Polytechnic University. That's by Cloverdale. I believe the agricultural, the students in agricultural studies built a labyrinth. It's right there. And Vancouver School of Theology, most of you probably know that one, yes. And this is the one I built with the City of Surrey and Fleetwood Park. And I have this labyrinth in my backyard. So our labyrinth, our patio was damaged one year and we needed to rebuild another patio. My husband says, "You love labyrinths so much, why don't we just make one in there and it will become multi-purpose?" So we do everything on that patio, you know, cleaning, gardening, everything. And this Forest Grove Elementary School, a mom there who was really interested in getting children to love their environment. The school, the students were, they were breaking windows, burning cars. They were tremendously disrespect to the school property. So she thought a labyrinth, and she started a garden, and she created a theme into being good stewards of our environment. So I helped them build a labyrinth there. It's a more simple form. So this is my latest project, and I'm very proud. It's 55 feet in diameter. I was commissioned to help them. The paths are 3 feet wide, so it's wheelchair accessible. You will see some of the grass around the edge. It's filling in now, so it looks really good. I think once they know the opening date, they will tell me and I'll put it over the internet. It's a really big deal. Their archbishop is coming to bless it. So as I've shown you in the different slides, that the labyrinth crosses cultural barriers and age barriers. It is suitable for everybody to walk it, regardless of your beliefs. So I often wonder, who are the labyrinth lovers? Why bother walking labyrinths? Am I crazy? I like labyrinths. So I belong to a Facebook group page that's about 8,000 members. So I put out a question, for what reasons do you walk labyrinths? And this is a quote from one woman, "Into the labyrinth I go, to lose my mind and to find my soul." And I thought that was interesting. So these were some of the responses that came back. Why do you bother walking labyrinths? a body prayer. It's healing, for healing, for reflection, for calm, for enjoyment, contemplation, centering, relaxing into my thoughts. It's a tool for walking meditation, relaxation, stress relief, curiosity, letting go. I'll let you soak in some of those. So if there are some of you who are labyrinth lovers out there, I'm certain you have your own reasons for walking it. So this is some, I needed a few slides of scientific research backing what I say, that walking labyrinths are, they're beneficial. So when I was writing my book, I did some research, and this is one that came up, Robert Sapolsky. He talks about the fight or flight response, and that, who has heard of the fight or flight response? So most of you do. So that's from ancient days when we are confronted, when we're small, when we're not powerful, like today with technology and weapons and all kinds of stuff. When man is on the bottom of the totem pole and we're at prey to large animals, we get triggered when we see something. We either run or we get eaten. That response triggers all kinds of chemical release in our body. And that is still happening when we fight with somebody, when we have an argument, when we're in a traffic jam, when a child misbehaves. So the same chemicals are still taking place. And what he says, over time with these stress events, stress actually shrinks our brain, adds fat to our bodies, and it unravels our DNA. DNA is the basic foundation for everything that we do. Our memory, our behavior, colors of our eyes are here. I think I'm losing you. So here, Herbert Benson, he is another medical doctor, who says that walking meditation are highly effective at reducing anxiety, and it actually lowers our blood pressure, and it lowers our breath rates, and it even reduces chronic pain. So if you have headaches or, you know, chronic backaches, it actually helps. And this is, he's the father of mindfulness meditation, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's interesting. He's a medical doctor in the States. In the 60s, he met Nick Nak Hang. The quote that Deborah used in our opening words, he's a Buddha Zen master. Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn happens to go to his retreat. He experienced what wonderful things mindfulness and walking meditation can do, came back, packaged it, and sent it out to the world as MBSR. That's what's commonly known, the program. And it's mindfulness-based stress reduction. A lot of the universities and colleges now offers it. So this is a labyrinth. I'm just sharing with you the anatomy of a labyrinth. So this is the mouth or the entrance. This is how we walk. It's a single path. And these are called borders or walls. And the center, or the goal, is in the center, in the middle of the labyrinth. So the walker, all you do is to follow the path, and it will take you to the center. And the center is believed to be like who you are, your values, your principle. Some people, when they get to the center, they like to stay there, because sometimes they receive a message. With any kind of mindfulness and meditation, it is a passive activity. We open our minds to receiving. So it's not like we're going somewhere to get something. It happens. You allow it. Okay, so how do we walk a labyrinth? This is where we do a bit of a meditation where we will get into experiential activity. Can I get you to tick this out? and place this on your lap. If I can get you to sit back into your chair with your feet, both feet on the floor, and just be comfortable. We're going into a meditation with the labyrinth. Place your finger on the mouth of the labyrinth. Place your finger on the mouth of the labyrinth. You may close your eyes, partially close your eyes. Okay? I'm going to get you to take a deep breath and blow out slowly. And can I get you to do another one? And let's do one more. This is preparing to walk. And just move along with your finger, move along the path to the speed that is comfortable for you. Some people move their finger very slow. And if you were walking a labyrinth, some people walk very slow while others run through it. So it is to do this activity at your own speed, at your own pace. When you get to the center, you can stay there as long as you like. It is best to keep your finger on the paper during this activity.